Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
First things first, I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the very animated Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. He's in a very good mood this morning.
Chris was torturing our poor sound guy Goose all day yesterday.
But if you're a sound
pretending
guy.
Pretending he didn't Chris have audio and then had audio, just torturing our guy.
You aged him like 30 years yesterday. Anyway, this is Nick Wright. We got a great Thursday show for you guys today. Aaron Rodgers finally met with the media. We'll hear from him. The NBA playoffs are all set. We'll tell you which games are the big ones. And we're going to start, though, with the latest on the Los Angeles Lakers. The stars were out in Brooklyn last night. LeBron James, the rest of that banana boat crew in the house to watch their friend Dwayne Wade's final game. This comes a day after LeBron's former team president, Magic Johnson, shocked the basketball world by resigning. LeBron was reportedly among the many stunned by Magic's decision, as was GM Rob Pelinka, who will stay on in that role where he'll reportedly now have even more power. All right, CC, it is time to look ahead. Without Magic Johnson there within the organization, what is next for the Los Angeles Lakers?
Well, it's hard for me to imagine, even though I'm optimistic, it's hard for me to imagine good things are going to happen because, I mean, who's going to make those decisions? The owner of the team, Jenny Buss, she's the person making all the decisions. So what are her sources? How's she going to go out? So if I'm a Lakers fan, which I have been since the ninth grade, my brother was drafted by the Lakers. Love the Lakers. Like, how can I be optimistic? Besides them landing LeBron James, knowing that they're in good salary cap situation based on their roster now, they don't have long-term commitments to a bunch of older players. They can sign another max player. I don't know why, dude. That's why I'm leaning on Nick here, why I should be optimistic, because I believe that Magic Johnson, I believe that he wanted to clean house. And not only Rob Pelinka, I believe that he wanted to be able to fire Luke Walton. And I believe there was a problem with that with Jenny Buss. And if Jenny Buss felt that way towards Magic Johnson, she must still feel that way. So I don't know how I can be optimistic outside of LeBron being there and not being they don't have the restrictions some other teams have. But I'm concerned that Jenny Buss, because ever since her dad died, they have gone on the worst history and team. I mean, they have not made the playoffs.
Right. From the time the franchise started in Minneapolis up until when her father passed, they had missed the playoffs 5 years in total. They have now, since her father passed, missed the playoffs 6 years in a row. So that kind of contextualizes.
I mean, that is the family business. She fired her brother 2 years ago for Magic Johnson.
Well, that's the part. I'm sorry to interrupt. You can fire your brother, but you can't fire Luke Walton. You can fire your brother, but you can't fire Kobe's old agent. Like, you can fire your brother, but Magic is so worried that you're so tied to Pelinka and or Luke Walton that he can't face you to tell them, to tell you, I'm quitting in part because I don't want to fire those guys. Something doesn't mesh here. This report's coming from Ramona Shelburne, who's on the ground and does a great job. But if it is true that the Lakers might take the exit path Magic gave them, even if he gave it to him in a very awkward way, and decide we are going to go down the road of just pretending everything was all good. We'll keep Luke. We'll elevate
Pelinka. Act like they made the playoffs.
Right. We're just going to act like the season really did end on Christmas when we were in fourth place and that everything was just fine. That will be a squandered opportunity because while nobody on this set liked how Magic handled his exit, we all, I think, acknowledged it was potentially to the Lakers' benefit to be able to reset and run this team like a real NBA franchise. I hate to bring him up 4 minutes in the show, but I was on with Colin yesterday, and Colin said the Lakers have a fork in the road. Hire David Griffin, to sign Kyrie, and try to do the Cavs West, or go after Jerry West, like you said. Go after Pat Riley. Go after Bob Myers. And consider trading LeBron and doing a whole reset. I think option A is better than option B. But if they go with option C, which is status quo, elevate Pelinka, bring in Kurt Rambis to a role, then the hell are you doing? then this will be Jordan's Wizards years, just with a player playing at a higher level. Mm-hmm. It will be a squandered, Jordan's Wizards years weren't squandered because he was so old, but it will be the squandered end of LeBron James if they don't have a hard franchise reset.
We talk so much about the dysfunction within the Knicks organization, right? That they're this storied franchise, that everything is, a lot of that blame is placed on James Dolan for not building this team right, for making all the wrong decisions. He gets a lot of that blame. They haven't made the playoffs in 6 years. Mm-hmm. Look at the Lakers. They haven't made the playoffs in 6 years. And yet we all seem so hesitant to place too much blame on Jeannie Buss because of your theory. We like her. She's very nice. She's mm-hmm. very well liked and respected around the league. But the decisions she has made in the last couple years, none of them have really turned out to be successful, starting with giving Kobe that contract all the way up until not wanting to fire Luke Walton. At some point, do you have to say, who holds accountability for what's happening in L.A.?
Well, she's got to hold accountability. Magic's out the door. Pelinka just got there. Him as an agent, what does he know? But when you look back on it, you did a great job, too. The Kobe contract, because this is not just one bad decision. This is a number of bad decisions year after year after year. Now, we haven't seen a team that had the type of success over the period of time that Dr. Buss had that success and falling off the cliff. Like, the Knicks haven't been relevant for a long time. And even in the times where they were playoff teams, they weren't championship teams.
Right.
The Lakers, man, every decade, they have competed for championships. And if people were being honest, if they were calling things as they were, they would be criticizing Jeannie Buss because her tenure, and you can't get fired when you own the team, but her tenure with the Lakers from a basketball operations, because from what I hear, they're sold out from a business standpoint. So she's doing a good job on the business standpoint. But those basketball decisions have me concerned. And what have me concerned the most is not what happened recently, but what you mentioned, Jenna, all the bad decisions that led up to this.
Well, but this is, you all of a sudden have a path to where you can totally shift the narrative. And Magic, by the way, Magic was his own worst enemy in this regard. If he had simply held a press conference, if he had never promised a second star, and if he had held a press conference at the end of the season yesterday and said, guys, I'm Magic Johnson. No one ever thought I was going to do this job for a decade. The Lakers now have LeBron James and cap space. I have done as good of a job as anyone ever could have imagined. I'm now going to hand it over to someone who can do the details. I'm going to be in the south of France and tweeting. I think people said, okay. Like, hey, when you hired Magic, he had promised you, I'll get rid of the bad contracts and deliver the best player in the world. You'd have signed up for that. The Lakers have a similar opportunity now if they do what I think the vast majority of well-run teams would do. Go try to get the best person possible. Not the most comfortable, but the best person possible.
That's what this should be about. And that's where the Lakers have had a problem the last, not 3 months, but the last 3 to 6 years, doing what was best. It started with that Kobe contract, and it has trickled down to, man, even her firing her brother, was that the absolute best? Hiring Pelinka and Magic, was that the absolute best? So now it's in question. Man, what is the best for the Lakers, and will they do it?
And Nick, I do think firing her brother was the right move, but I also think that this idea, when you are putting out there that Rob Pelinka's job is safe, the story should be, and what the Lakers should be presenting, and by the way, kind of odd yesterday that every player on the roster, LeBron's exit interview was supposed to be when Magic's interview was. That's why we didn't hear from him. But every player on the roster talks yesterday. Haven't heard from any management people. So poor Kyle Kuzma's got to account for what happened, right? But none of the management people have. But the message, even if it's back channeling, needs to be this. The person we hire as the president of basketball operations is going to decide on Luke, going to decide on Rob, going to decide on everything. No one should be safe.
Right.
No
one should. We thought Jeannie Buss was going to do that person a favor by firing Luke.
Right, but what you can't do is all of a sudden say whomever you is hiring is going to inherit them with that person locked in. You could fire him and do that person a favor, or you could put out there it's going to be that person's call. But putting out there Pelinka's safe and you want to keep Luke, that is That makes today as bad of a day for the Lakers as yesterday potentially
was. And leaves more questions than answers for this organization. All right, we'll talk much more about this coming up. On the other side, though, Aaron Rodgers finally meets with the media. Wait to hear what he has to say. That's next on FS1. And you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We'll talk Aaron Rodgers in just a second. But first, couple of highlights. Kings and Blazers and Ska Labassiere skying for the one-handed putback jam.
Blazers in this one, desperately trying to avoid that four seed. Come back from 25 down at the half, playing six guys the whole night, and get the win. Relegate the Rockets to the four.
Huge win.
Heat Nets, Chris LeVert driving baseline, delivers a strong dunk over Duncan Robinson.
LeVert's made a huge comeback, had the horrific injury a season ago. Weren't expecting him to be back, especially playing at the level he's playing at. Exciting to see this Brooklyn team. I was at this game last night. Didn't LeVert, didn't he go to college with that other kid, a Michigan kid he dunked on?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true.
I like that. Michigan.
Oh, there you go. You got it. Yeah.
Right? 55 Johnson.
Hornets and Magic.
Dusty don't know.
Nicholas Batum finding Miles Bridges for the alley-oop.
As we've been talking about, the final day of the NBA regular season, you typically don't see guys play all their starters. But the Hornets, they were trying to squeeze into the playoffs.
Couldn't quite do it.
So they had their full squad out there. Hornets, kind of a bit of a squandered year. They should
have found a way. That's one of Coach Izzo's guys. Coach Izzo was yelling at him a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. I can verify that.
Hawks and Pacers. Trae Young hitting Darren Collison with a quick between the legs move before making the layup.
This is a repeat of what he did earlier in the season. A little delay, backwards behind the leg. He's far more crafty with the basketball in the lane, Steph-ish, as we got into the second half of the season. Definitely had the more impressive, since the All-Star break, more impressive than Luka.
All right. Shifting gears now. It's been a tough week for Aaron Rodgers. Not so flattering article drops detailing the dysfunction between he and Mike McCarthy. A follow-up radio interview with Aaron calling it a smear campaign. Now, yesterday, Rodgers meeting with the media for the first time to address all of it. He maintained that despite everything, the expectations for this Packers team remain the same.
Like I said a couple days ago, I think, you know, there isn't a grace period. This isn't like other transitions where you kind of maybe give a pass for the first year or two as you get acclimated to the system. I mean, we have, a veteran quarterback, veteran offensive lineman. We signed, some big free agents for us, especially three on defense. And there's an expectation living and playing here that you're going to compete for championships, and I think we all expect to do that.
We talked, guys, a lot this week about off-the-field Green Bay Packers, relationships, the dysfunction, and how the demise of everything that's going on. But let's bring it back on the field now. What do the Packers have to do to get back to playoff form?
Well, for one, not Aaron McCarthy, but one of the problems that they had, not only defensively, but offensively, they didn't have a physical presence. Since Aaron Rodgers has taken over being the starting quarterback in Green Bay, they've had a top 10 rushing offense one time. So it's hard, even though he said, yeah, we got a veteran offensive line, but you know what they do? They back up pass protecting all the time. So for me, I like for them to change their philosophy. They have to build. People think just because Aaron is a magnificent thrower that you need to throw the ball 40 times. No, you can be a ground and pound and still take advantage of his arm, because also you have to try to help out their defense. They have not been a team that's been in sync, where their special teams, their defense, and their offense played in sync. On defense, we know they need to be better, but what would help out Aaron Rodgers? What about, you don't even have to be a top 10 defense. What about sacks and turnovers? Those are the big plays that they haven't constantly gotten the last couple years. So for me, from a defensive standpoint, I believe that their scheme is going to change. They're going more to a 34 defense. Now, can they create turnovers on the back end? Because if you give Aaron Rodgers a little bit of a run game and you give him, you're going to win the turnover margin, then you just rely on his magic at the end of the game. So the chance of him staying healthy, I believe that that's the type of system that if they're able to get into the playoffs, that's how Aaron Rodgers would be able to thrive. And then this last 3 to 5 years, that's what he should be looking to play. He shouldn't be the hero every game where he's got to throw 45, 50 times to bring the team back, score 40 points. Can Aaron Rodgers win some games 24-17. That would help him out this point in his career.
To your point about you don't have to have a great defense, but have an opportunistic defense, the 15-1 year when they had the 32nd ranked defense, they were number two in turnovers. So that defense, while it allowed a ton of yards,
yes,
it was able to, powered a lot by Charles Woodson's great play and others, force turnovers, whether it be strip sacks or interceptions. A team that I've been very critical in how they run their offense is the Seattle Seahawks. I feel like the Seahawks should maybe take a couple pages out of the Green Bay Packer playbook, and the Packers should maybe take a couple pages out of the Seattle Seahawks playbook. And by that I mean, the Packers should not be as run-reliant as the Seahawks are, but maybe a little bit more so. And the Seahawks, on the flip side, they shouldn't be as pass-happy as the Packers have been, but maybe a little bit more so, because the element that you bring up all the time when you talk about teams relying on their run game more that I think gets lost to a degree in the analytics community is the way it lessens the injury risk for your quarterback. Because we look at injuries as random. We look at injuries as mostly unpreventable. When they happen, they just happen. What can you do? It's bad luck. But there is an element of, if your quarterback has a chance, a 1 in 200 chance of breaking his collarbone every time he drops back, well, if all of a sudden he's dropping back, you know, of 8 less times a game, mm-hmm, then you're removing those 8 opportunities for injury. So it's not always that the run is necessarily the most effective play on this given snap, but it's that if we can have a passable running game, do we put our star in jeopardy less? Because one thing we have learned over the last decade consistently is if Aaron Rodgers isn't 100%, the Packers are not a good football team. If he's not on the field, or last year when he was hampered with the hairline fracture in his leg, they are not a good football team if Aaron Rodgers is not Aaron Rodgers.
And history would tell us, too, you can't be a passing team and play in Green Bay. I mean, what? You have a huge advantage because of the elements. You live in the elements. But now I'm going to take that away because you know what's the best thing I do? Passing. Well, you know, there's a Saturday in the playoffs. There's a Sunday in the playoffs, that being wild card division round. You might not be able to throw. So why would you develop a system that's based on you throwing the ball? I don't care how good Aaron Rodgers is. You don't have a dome there. If you get home field advantage, you're going to be playing in difficult conditions. Take advantage of those by having a more physical team. That's why the run makes sense. I don't care about the analytics community. When you're trying to balance out a football team, you're trying to have a physical presence. That's what Seattle does. Now, could Seattle do a little bit more? Seattle has the problem of they had all that money on their defense.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers didn't have that problem. So it's hard for those teams to balance it out based on economics.
But sometimes there's this reliance on the greatest guy to ever throw the quarterback. He's on your team. Throw him out there. He'll figure it out, because the chances are more often than not he's not going to get hurt. He's going to win a game. He'll eke it out. But one of the things that was detailed in this article was the fact that this guy, Aaron Rodgers, was so frustrated by the lack of innovation and creativity in Mike McCarthy's offense. Do we see this changing under Matt LaFleur? Are we going to see a completely different offense, more creative, more innovative, more, more avant-garde, if you will?
Well, I'm glad the story came out about Aaron Rodgers, because I believe he was at a crossroads, as you talked about with Colin, with the Lakers. Because after the firing of the coach, he was going to get a lot of criticism. Then all these stories start coming out. Then he tries to come out and debunk it. I believe that Aaron Rodgers will be at his best. He will be focused. He will be as focused now he has experience as when Brett Favre. Because, man, Packer Nation was split. Oh, we want Brett back. Well, man, we got Aaron Rodgers. I believe he will, because at that point, I remember that's when I met Aaron Rodgers. Oh, man, he was out to prove people wrong. Man, I am the future quarterback. I should have been the first pick in the draft. I believe that's the quarterback that Matt LaFleur is going to get. So I believe Aaron's mind will be wide open. I believe this offense will look totally different than anything we've seen Aaron operate before, Nick.
Two quick points. One is on Matt LaFleur. People that watched the Titans last year, I'm one of them that said, wait, he's an offensive mastermind. Smart football people really believe that he absolutely is going to bring wrinkles and elements to the offense that were not there previously, and that he is one of those bright young offensive minds.
Right. Take a look at Kyle Shanahan and what he did. Look for him to look more like what they do in San Francisco compared to what they did in Tennessee.
Certainly what Kyle Shanahan was able to do with a healthy, really good Matt Ryan, when you didn't necessarily always see that in Washington. I would say Kyle Shanahan in Washington was one guy, like Matt LaFleur in Tennessee potentially,
yep,
because of who the quarterback was,
right,
than someone different in Atlanta. But the other point is this, quickly. Aaron Rodgers made a very big point to tell everyone that would listen, Mark Murphy never told me not to be part of the problem. That conversation never happened. I don't know if that conversation did or didn't happen. But now Aaron Rodgers is very incentivized to not be part of the problem. Aaron Rodgers is very incentivized to make that article look like it was wrong, even if it was right. So if he had problems buying in before, if he had problems going with what the coach wanted before, if he had problems installing exactly what the coach wanted, I think those problems will go away, at least in the beginning, because Aaron Rodgers knows if things don't go right in Green Bay this year, people are going to blame
then
12,
it's on him.
Fair or otherwise.
Right. All right, let's take a break. Coming up, could an injury shake up the NBA playoffs? We'll tell you who's hurt and for how long. We'll explain next on First Things First.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Our next PBC Fight Night is a good one. Two former champs square off Saturday, 10 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Back here, First Things First. Oh, we got to go viral because last night was Dirk's last game in the NBA. And fittingly, he played the Spurs, one of his biggest rivals in his 21 seasons in the league. They honored him with a video last night. And this was Dirk's reaction.
And now, a 14-time NBA All-Star selected to 12 All-NBA teams, a league MVP and an NBA champion, a 7-foot forward from Germany, number 41, Dirk Nowitzki.
Really nice. I mean, when you're trying not to cry, playing that Legends of the Fall music doesn't help anybody.
Yeah, to me, this is equivalent. If you're in the NFL, you go to New England, where they don't respect anyone, mm-hmm. and Bill Belichick puts up a tribute video of your career totally out. And it's someone either from the Jets or the Dolphins, someone they have a fierce rivalry with. That's what happened last night, Nick, there in San Antonio. Class act.
It was, you mentioned the Patriots. They did something similar for Jason Taylor. Post-career, you know, be with someone they had a rivalry with. Mm-hmm. But this is, the Spurs do everything right. They are a class organization. And I got emotional watching that because what I think was going through Dirk's mind there is, as you say all the time, you have a lot of other cool jobs. He will never get introduced like that again.
No.
He will never have that moment, and he's had that moment around 80 times a year for 21 years. And so it was one thing to have his final home game. It's another thing to have the last time they're going to call my name. And it was great they did it like it was a home game, even though it was insane.
Yeah, he should get a copy of that because he's going to get stuff like, hey, Dirk, take out the trash. That's what I get. You know, no tribute videos around here. Hey, buddy, clean up your mess.
You want us to introduce you when you walk in every day?
Tribute videos around here.
You're no Hall of Famer up in here, homie.
Dr. Got that Storch, yesterday. Start your morning.
Yo, bro. Big for no reason.
The Masters.
Just like that yesterday.
The Masters starts today in Augusta.
Oh, that's funny.
Tiger tees off at 11:04. Tiger in search of his 15th major and his first Masters victory since 2005. Vegas has him at 16-1 odds to win. See, what do you expect from Tiger in Augusta?
If he's going to win, if that Vegas is going to be right, Tiger's got to play the par fives better. People would talk about his putting, how he struggled with his putter of late. Yes, one of the worst on tour right now as far as putting the ball. Typically, when he comes through those gates at Augusta, his putting gets squared away. So I'm concerned about the par fives, and I'm concerned about the first nine holes today. Tiger Woods, people will not believe this. He is the most nervous golfer on that first hole. Look at it. Big tournament after big tournament. Bogey, double bogey on the first hole, out of bounds. So watch those first nine holes today, and he's got to shoot under par, Nick, because he can't chase down these young kids.
And he can't give himself a big deficit after the first round. The last time he run, the only time he's won in the last 5 years, any tournament tour championship, I think it was a 65 in the first round, and where he didn't give himself that big deficit. But the other element for Tiger, you mentioned the par five. His career at Augusta, where he's been great. He's way over par on par threes.
Yes.
He's way over par on par fours. And I think he's 169 under on the par fives. He has to make his hay there. And I never believed it till you told me. He is straight up nervous on the first hole of these tournaments. See if he can keep it in the fairways at Augusta.
Nick and I got a $100 bet. I'm betting he bogeys the first hole. Mm-hmm. Nick, of course, Tiger Woods going to birdie it.
No, well, listen, anything but a bogey. But you also told me I'm not supposed to bet on Tiger this tournament. You think I'm a jinx?
Did you listen?
No, I bet on him.
There you go. To the NBA now. Dwayne Wade played in the final game of his career last night. And how about this? A triple-double in front of LeBron, CP3, Melo, and our own Chris Carter. See, what was it like? What was the atmosphere like there in Brooklyn?
It was very exciting. And it's really hard to match because we saw not only Dwayne Wade but Dirk get their honors at home in front of their home crowd. And we know those would be special. But, man, in Brooklyn, man, you got no connection to Brooklyn. Brooklyn's getting ready for the playoffs. Man, they put out, man, I mean, they do a good job with the product there as far as entertainment, the videos honoring him, and then they had made a pact with LeBron and Melo that they would all be in attendance. They had a special entry sitting right there on the court. So it was a special night for one of the great all-time classy NBA players.
Triple-double for Dwayne Wade in his final game, and the assist that gave him the triple-double, you know who hit the jump shot? Udonis Haslam.
Oh,
which
yeah.
was quite fitting.
Yes.
Also, Dwayne Wade's been doing these jersey giveaways all year long. Budweiser did an amazing four-minute ad talking about that. He gave his final jersey away to Melo because Melo didn't get the end he was supposed to get. Mm-hmm. Melo and Wade never got to play each other in a game that Melo thought was going to be the end to do the jersey giveaway. So the last game he gave to his good friend Carmelo, I thought that was really touching and really cool. One of the all-time greats.
I just think Dwayne Wade likes to take off his shirt in retirement.
A lot. Goodness, a lot. I don't mind it. The NBA playoffs are set, and so are Knicks' weekend plans. The Thunder are the sixth seed in the West. Their matchup with the three seed Blazers starts on Sunday. Nick, can Russ and PG make some noise out West?
I think they're happy with the draw. I think that they're happy they avoided Houston. I know Houston didn't want to play them, it would appear. I think that, listen, one of these two teams is going to be able to avenge what was a very depressing round one last year.
Yes.
The other team is going to have real answers in the
real questions.
Real questions yes. to answer mm-hmm. this offseason because it'll be two straight second round exits. I think the Thunder have to like their side of the bracket. You get Portland in round one with no Nurkic. You potentially have Denver in round two. So, yes, I think the Thunder absolutely can upset. To me, this is the most likely upset of any of the first round series out West.
They set themselves up with the huge comeback win over Houston yep. the other night that put them in position that, man, no Nurk. Of course, I want to play Portland. I don't want to play Utah. I don't want to play Houston. They got the best matchup. Now, getting through this matchup, because they're still going to have to deal with Damian Lillard and our boy CJ. They're going to have to deal with them. Those two can take over a series.
Absolutely.
All right, finally, game one between the Sixers and the Nets. The 3-6 matchups is set for Saturday. The Sixers, though, might be without their main attraction. GM Elton Brand said it's possible Joel Embiid could miss the beginning of the playoffs with a sore left knee. He's been dealing with knee and back issues ever since the All-Star break. So, Nick, how vulnerable is this team if Joel Embiid is sidelined even for a little bit?
Man, every team in the playoffs, if they're without their best player, is vulnerable. That includes the Warriors if Steph Curry were to be out. But the Sixers in particular, because they're the thinnest of the really good teams. The Warriors are probably the next thinnest, to be honest, because of how much high-level players they have at the top of their roster. But the Sixers, everything needs to go through Joel Embiid. And if we're being honest about Jimmy Butler as a Sixer, Jimmy Butler has not been all-star fringe all-NBA Jimmy Butler as a Sixer. He hasn't been that guy this year. Now, maybe he will be in the playoffs. Maybe he has just been deferring to Joel Embiid. But I can't just say, oh, with no Joel Embiid, we're going to start getting 27 a night from Jimmy Butler. I don't know that that's true. Now, I think they're being very cautious with him. He hurt this knee. If you remember, it was here in New York when he jumped over Regina King the night before she won her Oscar, I think, or a couple nights before. And then he played in the All-Star game, missed 8 games afterwards, yes. and they've been cautious with him since. But I'm very curious to see, is this a little subterfuge by Elton Brand? Are you trying to maybe, you know, mm-hmm. you're trying to make the Nets have to prepare for one thing or the other? Or is Embiid really less than 100%? Because if the Sixers are going to do what they plan to do this postseason, it all runs through the best player on their team.
If Joel Embiid is not 100%. This is the upset of the first round. All right, they play the first five games in 10 days. They start on the 13th. The fifth game is the 23rd. So in that, if he's Nick, you got five games. So you're basically playing every other night. So for me, looking at the series, looking at the matchups, and there are some good matchups in that first round in both the East and the West, this is the upset because I know, man, they'll have a hard time matching up with Brooklyn because they do have some depth. And if Brooklyn gets hot on the three-point line, we know Philly's good for their defense, but no defense can stop a team once they get hot shooting the three ball. And if Joel Embiid is nicked up or not at 100%, man, that this to me is the upset of the first round.
What can't he do if he's not 100%? Where can you exploit that weakness if you know you're only getting 50, 60, 70% of
the time? He won't be as good defensively. You remember the play, was it? Who was it where he was it on Steph? I can't remember. The play where the guy went underneath him and then he blocked it.
Kyrie.
Kyrie, thank you. Was mm-hmm. on Kyrie. Oh, yes, in the big Sixers Celtics.
Yes.
Exactly
mm-hmm.
right. The type of nimble athleticism that you don't typically see from a guy who's 7 feet one, 7 feet two, that's there. And I would wonder, can you play? One of the reasons I said I think Sixers will be fine with the short bench is in the playoffs, your rotation shorten. Your best guys play 36 to 40 minutes mm-hmm. instead of 32 to 36 minutes. If you have to nurse the knee and Embiid's on anything close to a minutes restriction, that just not being out there is something sure. he can't do.
Yeah, if he can't get up and down the court.
Yeah,
if he can't be as athletic as he is right there, that takes away. Because he also, when he brings you out to the three-point line, that pump fake and going into the paint, how much of that are you going to see? So it's something we must watch.
One other thing on getting up and down the court, to quote one of Chris's sources, the great Butch Carter, in the NBA playoffs, the centers are not going to get the calls. The one place where, if you have a very athletic big man, you can get the advantage is if he can beat you up the court on offense.
Before you set up that
defense. Before you set up. They also won't call offensive fouls on a big man who is going to immediately initiate position. And so if Embiid's not 100%, then he's not going to be beating guys up in the secondary break. There's just different things to watch. I think Elton Brand's tricking us a little bit. Personally, I think Embiid's going to be fine, but if he's not, this is a big, big deal for Philly.
I'm sorry, did you just reveal who Chris's source was?
Well, listen,
isn't that the whole point of a source?
Listen, man, it's his big brother. It's his big brother who's wearing him his whole life.
So much for all your information now.
It's just one of his sources. Listen, man, Chris's been riding the great Butch Carter's coattails
for
30
time.
Years. I mean,
definitely the last 2 years
truth.
Here.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, moving on to the Golden State Warriors.
Eat that. Take that.
They're,
hey, man, I got a brother that played in the NBA, coached in the NBA. That ain't no loss for me.
It's more than Nick and I have.
Hey, yeah.
The Warriors' quest for a three-peat begins Saturday against the Clippers in the first round. If this past season is any indication, the Dubs will be just fine. They took the season series from the Clips 3-1. All right, CC, what's the biggest obstacle to the Warriors three-peating?
Man, the biggest obstacle is themselves. Let's see Steph Curry in that first quarter. Is Steph going to be healthy? Are they going to have to make the adjustment? Man, the Clippers don't have the type of firepower, but Doc Rivers is one of those type of coaches that typically can come up with a scheme to be able to slow the game down to give his team a chance because the Clippers in this, man, they're overmatched in this one. So the only chance is Steph Curry if he's nicked up because I believe that Kevin Durant will be on a mission in this playoff. Not only the three-peat, but he might personally three-peat as the finals MVP before he leaves Golden State.
All right, so the biggest obstacle as a team is the Rockets. And now, by the way, the Rockets are on their side of the bracket. The Rockets Ooh. Are the team they would be facing in round two. But obviously the Warriors would prefer in the first round. They had three options. The Spurs, who are just so well coached that nobody likes playing the Spurs as a heavy favorite because even if you're going to beat them, they're going, they might
eat long
and they
series.
Might show your next opponent good ways to defend you. That, you know, having mm-hmm. Pop have 2 weeks with you. Nobody wants to play the Thunder in the first round just because they have the two high level players.
Yeah,
so they're happy
absolutely.
They get the Clippers. But I'll tell you one guy to watch who's going to be a pest, Patrick Beverley. The Clippers are a team that you're going to get a little nicked, a little dinged, a little bruised playing. Montrezl Harrell is going to be out there as a 6 foot, 7.5 inch monster rebounder throwing elbows and knees and hips into you. Patrick Beverley, who Russell Westbrook had never been injured his entire basketball career till one day he tried to call timeout and Patrick Beverley ran into him. This is years ago.
Yes.
Patrick Beverley was playing in Russia 18 months before he injured Russell Westbrook. He has never forgot.
Him and LeBron got into a confrontation.
And he is going to be knocking Steph Curry down.
Great point, Nick.
To be setting illegal screens. Like, so do the Warriors have any chance of losing the Clippers? No. Would I be shocked if this series goes more than five games? Absolutely. I would wager any amount of money this series is over in five games
maximum.
Nick,
do you have a little something for players like Patrick Beverley, like that keep stuff going?
What do you mean?
I mean, like, you like them. Like, you like to put their information out there.
Listen, I think Patrick Beverley's story is a good one. And
yes.
I think he's important to this series. I think Patrick Beverley, I knew him from when he played in Houston.
No, he's got a great story.
There.
Went around the world.
Around the world. And he has been, this is the small things that, not to make everything about the Lakers, but that a well-run team like the Clippers, the well-run team in L.A., they find, okay, we're going to lose Chris Paul. We're going to have to do a sign and trade with Chris Paul. Well, give us Patrick Beverley. Give us that guard so we can build something with him. So the Clippers have no shot in this series to beat the Warriors, but they have a shot to beat up the Warriors. And when this next opponent for the Warriors is the Houston Rockets, that's where it could matter.
Is there any way this Warriors team can beat the Clippers if you either, A, don't have Steph Curry, or Steph Curry is not at 100%?
Yeah, Steph Curry could be out this whole series. They'd still beat the Clippers.
Yes.
I mean, they're still going to beat the Clippers. The thing is, how much are they going to be banged up compared to Houston, who's got to get through Utah? And that might be five or six game series. So Golden State, it's important that they come out and try to get this series over with, because the more you play, it seems simple, but the more the chance of an injury. Guaranteed, at least a couple prominent players in the playoffs, they will get hurt and it will affect their team.
I know the Warriors have said Steph Curry is going to be fine for game one of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Given that they didn't draw San Antonio, they didn't draw OKC, they did draw the Clippers, I wouldn't be shocked if they are a little extra cautious and let Steph have an extra few days to recover. They can beat the Clippers.
Day or minute restriction?
No. I'm saying I wouldn't be shocked if they give him the game off.
Oh.
If they tell him to show up for game two. Like, they can beat the Clippers without Steph after the first round. They obviously need Steph in every series moving forward. But, yeah, the Clippers can hurt you, like, more literally than figuratively, and that's what the Warriors should watch out for.
All right, good stuff. Let's take a break. Coming up, will Magic Johnson's resignation fuel LeBron next season? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're now joined by NBA champ Antoine Walker. Thanks for hanging out,
Antoine. Good to see you, sir.
It has been a long, drama-filled NBA season. We are finally at the playoffs, and now we have some actual games to discuss, Antoine. Let's start with your former team, the Boston Celtics. They are gearing up for game one of their first-round matchup with the Pacers on Sunday. After a very inconsistent season, the Celtics ended up as the fourth seed in the East with a tough battle ahead, and they'll have to do it without Marcus Smart. The fiery guard will miss the first two rounds with an oblique injury. Yesterday, Kyrie addressed the media, tried to put this season in perspective. Take a listen.
A lot of just up and downs that just could have been handled better from a professional standpoint, personal. And I'm talking about me personally. I'm not talking about our team. I had a lot of questions, a lot of just things that weren't being answered straight up about what it takes to be a great professional in this league. And I think that the frame of that is just outdated, in terms of what you have to be every single day. And it's not that hard, you know what I mean? Like the media, all the stuff that comes with it. I think that it's an exciting part of that you got to be aware of. But the real part is just, literally what I used to wake up every single morning to do. Has to put a ball in the hoop and be really great at it.
Antoine, when this season started, the bar was set high for the Boston Celtics. A lot of people had the Celtics either coming out of the East or at least close to it. What are your expectations now after everything that's happened this past regular season as they gear up for the playoffs?
It's going to be difficult, and it's kind of just listening to Kyrie, just the lack of confidence that he has in his team and his unit is going to make it very difficult. Now, do I believe they can get past Indiana? Yes. And I believe that because they don't have a star. Indiana's missing Victor Oladipo. Mm-hmm. We will finally understand why they won't be able to get past, because they need Victor Oladipo to get past the Boston Celtics. And Kyrie's a finisher. He's having a career year. He's putting up big-time numbers. He'll be able to finish, close these games off against the Pacers. But it's going to be a struggle. I'm looking at the 6-7-game series. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, we know what awaits in the second round if they're able to get past the Pacers with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah. listen, this is put up or shut up time for Kyrie now. He has said all year, I'm waiting for the playoffs. They are going into a series where, because they don't have Oladipo, Kyrie is the only star on true star on either team. They were able to hold on and get home court advantage in this series when at a time it looked like they were not. And I want to listen, Boston folks, I don't want to hear any Marcus Smart excuses. I know Marcus Smart's out. Oh, he's the guy that guards Bojan Bogdanovic the best. I know it. It's true. You're supposed to win this series now. And this was the team. Almost everyone had them coming out of the East. Some people had them challenging the Warriors for the title. That this was the team that was built to challenge the Warriors. It was deep. It had multiple All-Stars. It had soon-to-be NBA scoring champ Jason Tatum. And Kyrie, all year long, through the fits and starts of the season, has said, just can't get me to the playoffs. You're there now, and you're there now against a team that you should go beat. Now, Kyrie, I think, has matured over the course of the year. Kyrie has played the best season of his career without any question from an individual standpoint. It is very important for him that he shows up big in this series, and Kyrie's play, along with the general depth of the Celtics, should be enough to beat the Pacers. But I'm not assigning them. I'm not advancing them to the second round automatically. The Pacers are the type of team they've lost to all year long. Teams that are less talented but more cohesive. The type of team that has beat the Celtics all year long is the type of team the Celtics were in the playoffs last year. An under-talented, cohesive unit that's well coached. So this is going to be the best series in the first round out East. And I don't think the Celtics have an obvious path. The path should be through Kyrie Irving.
Well, if you're a professional athlete, how do you, or if you're Brad Stevens addressing his team before they take the court, how do you say, okay, let's forget what happened. Let's forget the ups and downs and the inconsistent regular season. You got a new slate. Everyone's starting from scratch now. How do you get the player in the mindset to start fresh and to live up to what the Boston Celtics expectations should
be? I know through talking to you, you come from the theory of, oh, you can't hit that switch. You tried that before with some talented teams. Once you get to the playoffs, you weren't able to do it. So I'm a believer based on experience. Unless you just have uber more talent than the other team, or you are a bunch of veterans, or you maybe got guys at midseason who didn't necessarily have that chemistry, I believe what we're going to see is what we saw during the regular season. Now, I do believe from Kyrie, back to your first question, I believe that Kyrie is going to try to do a LeBron-ish type thing. Especially now without Marcus Smart in there. Like, they should get more minutes, because typically the minutes was a problem there in Boston. But I know Kyrie can get his game off, but can he make the other young players feel like they're included? I think that is the biggest question in them getting through Indiana and trying to get through that series cleanly, because they need to be rested up for Milwaukee, because I don't think the people in Boston will accept, oh, well, we lost to Milwaukee 4-2 in round two because Milwaukee is the number one seed.
I think you got to, if I'm Boston, a couple things work in their favor. One, you got home court advantage. I know they wasn't a great home team, but still you got the important games on your home floor. I think that plays a big part in the playoffs. And typically your young players play better at home. So you got to be, but then I think with Marcus Smart being out, it helps Jason Tatum. It helps Jaylen Brown. Because now they know
maybe
their
minutes. Maybe Gordon Hayward, too.
Yeah, it helps. Now your minutes, you know, your minutes will be there. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to play. They'll have to look over their shoulder. If they make a mistake, won't have a short leash. He's going to have to stay with those guys longer. So I think it helps in that sense. And I just think right now, with Kyrie Irving being the closer, and he is a great closer, they'll be able to get them past the Pacers. We'll talk about the second round when we get there, if they get there.
Nick, Marcus Smart, though, he has kind of a you know, he does a lot of things. His stat sheet won't necessarily always be the way to be able to look at his overall value. But his overall physical play is kind of a buffer for Kyrie. Now, with him being out, aren't you concerned
you'd be super concerned if Oladipo was playing, because Smart would be the one checking Oladipo, not Kyrie. They don't – the Pacers don't have a guard that's just going to kill you, to Antoine's point. But, yes, Marcus Smart – is invaluable to this team on court, off court, when he plays, when he doesn't, because of the intangible stuff, because he can guard the other team's best perimeter player so you can hide Kyrie. Now they're going to ask Jaylen Brown to step into that role. The other thing for Marcus Smart, to his credit, going into this season, he and Charles Barkley were the two worst high-volume three-point shooters in NBA history. This year, he was shooting 36%. He, in a summer, got it better, and it added an element to that Celtics team. It made him a much more useful offensive player. They will miss him. But I'm going to hold the Celtics to what they were supposed to be. They have not dealt with devastating injury this year. Mm-hmm. They have not dealt with some out of their control. Where did this unforeseen circumstances? You have the team you said you were going to have. If you would have at the beginning of the season said you're going to play Milwaukee in the second round, they would have said, awesome. Mm-hmm. Sign me up for it because we're going to be the one seed. They're going to be the four seed. All year long, you've said, don't worry about it. Get us to the playoffs. You're in the playoffs. I want to see it. Prove me wrong, Boston. I've been the one man on a hill saying your team's not that good. Prove me wrong this postseason.
I agree with you to a certain degree. I just think it's going to be too hard to just turn it on and we're going to see a team play great basketball. I think they're going to struggle. I think it's going to be hard. I think because of the star power on the Boston side, they'll be able to get past the first round. But after that, I think you're hoping for a miracle to think they're just going to turn it on and beat a team possibly like the Milwaukee Bucks who've won 60 games and 16 games better than that.
Well, one note just real quick before we move on. If they can't do that, then we're watching the last 5 to 12 games of Kyrie Irving as a Celtic. That's all that's on the line is retaining Kyrie Irving, so no pressure.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.